Chapter 87. Darrow. Casus Belli. The pyramidal holocaster glows to life. Hundreds of golds fill the bridge of the Lightbringer and stand arrayed behind Lysander. I recognize a few. Cicero Avotum stands at Lysander's right, wearing an expression of contempt. Lysander is covered in blood and horrific wounds. His cheek has been punctured. His chest, too. His left arm is savaged and hangs limp. His face is swollen, yet it is the darkness of his eyes that haunts me. All hope and warmth drain from my body. Something is terribly wrong. As Lysander speaks, the wound on his cheek reveals his molars.
Salve, brothers and sisters of the Rim. In the spirit of friendship, unity, and honour, when you cried out for aid, I set sail without hesitation. I called on my allies to set aside your past treasons, to forget that it was the Ra that slaughtered the Sword Armada at Ilium with Darrow and the Rising. To forgive the Ra, who made the deal that sent the Rising to attack Luna and set fire to the Society.
I look over at Diomedes. He is stricken with confusion, but Loon isn't done.
My allies showed the strength of their character. They forgave. They forgot. They sailed. They risked their lives, their people, their treasure, and delayed the siege of Mars all to help you. Only to find Darrow, our great enemy, once again a guest in your house, drawing up schemes for war in the core. Only for me, who vouched for you, to be attacked by assassins sent up from the Garter. I bear the marks of their efforts on my body. I live only because of the sacrifice of Vrone T. Flavinius, one of our greatest patriots. I am sick with grief and disgusted you would send a man after me whom I once considered a brother. Look on what you've done.
A body is dropped from above. It sways from a rope tied around its neck. His neck. I am gripped by a great stillness. My skin crawls. The world takes on a dreamlike quality. Words are muffled, sight two-dimensional. I waver, struck dumb. Cassius. Pressure builds in my chest. My beautiful, brave friend hangs like a carcass in a butcher's freezer. He is naked and brutalized, his arms broken. Blood leaks from dozens of bullet holes and stab wounds. His sword hand is missing. The hand that used to reach over and squeeze my shoulder as we sat in the cockpit of his ship. The hand that used to grip my wrist to correct my blade form. The hand he drank with and would gesture with like a trained orator as he spoke. Tears pour down my face. I hurt all over. He is dead. Cassius. This is a nightmare. I'll wake up in my bunk on the Archie and find him yawning in the cockpit. I cover my mouth to stop myself from crying out in pain. Why did he go? Why did he have to go? Why didn't he just wait for me on his ship? It's such a waste. I just got him back. I can't think of anything but him smiling on the Archimedes when I told him we were brothers, and he agreed, and how he then just sat there in such contentment. So safe with me. Why did he go? I don't want to be here. I want to be home with Virginia's arms around me, or back with him in the cockpit. We should have stayed on Europa. We should have fought. Dying at his side would have been better than this. I'd trade him for all the ships, all these moon lords. He was worth them all put together. Diomedes is talking. I can't hear what he says. He's enraged. I've never heard him so angry. Then I look over and see the tears streaming down his face. He points at Lysander.
Loon, you are a liar, and your empty words are evil. We spoke of Atlas. You confessed his involvement.
Who would not agree to a fiction to survive a meeting with Darrow? I only escaped as a child because I put the Dawn Scepter in Virginia's hand. But I ask you, where is the Fear Knight? Lurking in the shadows? So he must be all around us all the time. Too often the Rising has blamed him for every evil that besets it. One man cannot be everywhere. I know for a fact he has been seen in operations in South America. Hundreds of witnesses can attest, as my allies can attest to my character. Darrow has poured poison in your ear and called it honey. I know you are a good man, Diomedes, but you have been manipulated, as have you, my noble moon lords. An enemy besets you. An enemy who has fought for years by Darrow's side, led by the father of the man Darrow still claims as brother. And then Darrow arrives, as if by magic, to deliver your Diomedes from the clutches of doom and present himself as your savior.
I am too heartbroken and disgusted to speak. Gaia does for me.
You wretched worm! Weasel! Gaia snaps. Foul tyrant seed! I spoke to my son Atlas. I looked in his face. I heard from his own mouth the game he has been playing.
Atlas did all this only to reveal himself to you and let you live?
Lysander frowns.
Strange. Gaia, you are a spymaster. You know how ludicrous your story must sound. Is there any person in that room who hates the Corps more than you? Your husband was killed by my grandmother's orders, as were some of your kin when they rose up in arms against their sovereign. My lords, has she advocated for an alliance with Darrow?
The Moon Lords look at each other. I could kill them all. Diomedes motions me to stay silent, as if Loon was leaving room for anyone else to speak. I watch the man prattle with a heart full of hate.
Romulus was tricked by Darrow. Diomedes has been tricked by Darrow. The Ra have failed you, my lords. I came out here to save Ilium because I believe in unity. I believe in reform, peace, prosperity for the high and low. I believe in order and the sacrifice needed to achieve it. But I also believe in tolerance and forgiveness. My allies and I will still destroy the Volk threat and the insurgents on Europa and sail home at no cost to you. No cost, save proof that we are united in the pursuit of peace. That proof is simple. Render Darrow unto me, or face the consequences.
The Moon Lords, who have so far been entertaining Lysander's tower of lies and allowing him to cast the shadow of doubt over Diomedes' honor, show their true character. Without even looking at one another, they stand in unison against the ultimatum. Pride may be their folly, but it is also their beauty.
Diomedes speaks for them.
Darrow has eaten the bread of this body. He is a guest. We decline your ultimatum. It is impossible. Lysander, I have offered you another path.
You say the Slave King has saved you? Very well. Let the Slave King feed you.
The signal dies. The Moon Lords, all standing, wonder what the hell just happened. I am still slowed by the loss of Cassius. Diomedes turns to me, absolutely astonished at the bald-faced lies. Lysander knows your ways, I say, numb. He knows we have evidence. This call wasn't for the Lords. It was to show his allies he has a casus belli. You need to get your people to safety, if you can. I look at the slippers on my feet, everyone's feet. and I feel dread in my belly. Diomedes is about to say something, and then his eyes widen. We need more people like Diomedes in the world. He is true. He is noble. But unfortunately, that also makes him naive to the extremities evil will embrace. The Moon Lords are naive as well, because they think Lysander came to them in earnest to win their approval, as if their approval means shit to a man with a Moonbreaker. None of them yet understand that Lysander was just covering his ass before committing a war crime. The realization comes to Diomedes as a bar of light in the distance divides the blackness of his pupils. I turn to follow his gaze in time to see the catacomb-like darkness of Nival Night beyond the Garter become as bright as a Mercurian summer day. Particle cannons. A column of light links the Lightbringer to the golden horizon of Demeter's grain fields. The columns multiply, stemming from the Lightbringer and then from the Bellona and Votum ships. To the east, one of the atmosphere bubbles pops in slow motion, like a water balloon pierced with a needle. Orchards and grain fields flash burn as the superheated air ignites everything in its path. The shield dome of Plutus bangs like a gong struck by an avalanche as the particle beams hit the shields to form a cathedral of light and sound thunder over the city. The noise wakens me from my stupor of sorrow. I have faced many bombardments on three separate planets. They are the definition of hell. Far worse than anything else in war because of the helplessness they instill. Yet I have never been caught off guard like this. Like a civilian. No armor, no plan, no resources, no men, no grav boots, kilometers from my ship. The terror sweeps the humanity out of me, out of the Moon Lords, and we turn into mice scrambling for the exit. Order! Diomedes calls, and the three other Olympic knights rush from the side of the room to echo him. The authority in his voice is a tonic to our panic. Evacuate by seniority! Marveling at the near instantaneous reversion from chaos to discipline, I watch the Moon Lords file toward the main exit by rows. I peer out from between the columns of the House of Bandy, scanning the air over the city, over the burning grain fields to the east and the burning orchards to the west, and I see what I feared. They fly low, visible only because of the light that shines off their plating. Missiles. The recently restored defensive shield over Plutus is strong, nigh impenetrable due to its energy coming from the tidal shifting of the moon itself, but there are always gaps for missiles to slide in under. The decapitation stroke is on its way. The city's remaining defensive towers target the missiles and detonate the barrage shy of the House of Bounty. The missiles still tear a hole in the cityscape a kilometer wide. The House of Bounty shudders and lurches from the shockwave. I keep my feet. I'm one of the few who do. Diomedes and the Olympic Knights shout for the Moon Lords to move faster and carry the old. Something hits the building. A carving of a dryad breaks free of the ceiling and falls to crush a teenage Moon Lord who likely never held his world staff before today. Sticking out from under the statue, his hand twitches for the staff. It is out of reach. His hand takes on the same shape of the iron hand that grips the world he will never see again. His home, Triton. Then hairline fractures race through the ceiling. I sidestep a piece of rubble before it crushes me. Gaia, who has stayed behind to help a colleague, sidesteps another dryad as it crashes down. A shudder goes through the building as something slams into its roof. A crack races through the wall into one of the pillars holding up the exit arch. The pillar begins to lean inward. If it goes, the arch will collapse and we'll be trapped with a sheer drop to either side. I shout a warning to Diomedes and race up the risers to jump over the Moon Lords who clog the exit artery. I shove my way through the leaner moon-born bodies just as the lower half of the pillar caves inward. I arrest its collapse, taking the weight on my shoulder. Something pops on impact, maybe my collarbone. My feet scrabble on the ground until they find a crack between the paving stones. On Earth, with its punishing gravity, I could not hope to bear the burden of the pillar. On Io, I can take five times the weight. I grunt and roar with effort, holding the pillar up and holding back the collapse of the exit.
Moon lords flow past me. My body is breaking, the weight compacting my vertebrae. I am losing my battle against the stone. Then Diomedes is with me. Then a woman, her face centimeters from my own. Greca Au Kodovan, whose dockyards I destroyed. And then two more Olympic knights. Together we push against the pillar. It feels like an eternity. It must be less than half a minute. Then a hand grabs my shoulder, and all together we throw ourselves through the exit arch. It collapses behind us with a grumble of stone. Something hits me in the back of the head. I trip and fall. My vision swims. The world groans and shakes all around me. I struggle to get up, my shoulder a ruin, to see a leathery hand extending down toward me. I grip it, and Gaia pulls me up with surprising strength. Stumbling like drunks after the moon lords, we pass through the antechamber filled with washing pools, where the lords doffed their skip boots for the ceremonial slippers, through another chamber where incense still burns in braziers. I feel the building tilting under my feet. Then we're through the antechambers, out under the blazing, thundering sky. Rock grumbles and cracks behind us. I glance over my slumped right shoulder. The House of Bounty is gone. The great hand of Demeter upon which it sat has broken off at the wrist. For a moment, a single moon lord stands in its place, frozen in time, his hand outstretched, his mouth open. But there is no ground beneath his slippers, and he follows the building down into the abyss. The moon lords ignore the landing pads and carry on along stone stairs cut into the statue. They disappear into an aperture beneath Demeter's right breast, one after the other. I must have been hit in the head harder than I thought, because I swoon on the stairs. Guy's grip on my belt keeps me from tumbling over the side. There is nothing to do but follow the quickening current of bodies into the statue. By the time I realize we've made it to safety, the statue seals the door behind us. The affectations of antiquity do not grace its interior. A modern lift lies within. Not one of the gulls rejoices in surviving their near brush with death. Their faces are drawn, pale, lacerated by broken stones, and their eyes hopeless as Lysander's ships make their world shudder.
You really should think about changing the slipper policy,
Cassius would say right now. Crammed together with them, my right shoulder probably broken, blood slithering down the back of my neck, I think again of Cassius swaying on the end of that rope. I sink into my grief as we descend down and down through a chute into the metal and stone world of bunkers. A shudder goes through me. My heart weighs as much as a planet. It was all finally starting to go so well. Medici greet us when we arrive in a bunker. They tend to us and start to usher away the wounded. Diomedes turns to face the others. His shoulder is fleeced of skin after his efforts with the pillar. The moon lords look no better. Their robes are tattered, their skin flayed by stone. Diomedes looks gutted, lost, almost insane.
There are people on the surface, people in the second level. There are people everywhere.
He nods after the Medici.
That way lies safety. Shelter! The garages and tunnels to the surface are this way.
He takes off at a jog toward the garages. All but the oldest of the moon lords follow.
Carry me, Gaia says.
I look down to see the old woman glaring up at me. Blood sluices down her left leg.
Carry me, Garza. I can't run, but I can fly.
Shoulders shot. Get on my back, I say.
The old matron of House Ra clambers onto my back, and I take off at a run.